Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Jason Staples. Lots of things to talk about today. Going to be forcing a couple things together into one podcast. It's been a busy election week, but we're going to be covering both the NC State win, the narrow win in Carter-Finley Stadium in Raleigh, a place that has not been very friendly to Florida State. And ugly wins are always better than any type of loss, so Florida State escapes on that one. We'll also preview the Boston College game in the second part of this show. Not going to do too much here, just evaluate a little bit of what we saw and discuss sort of where things are headed from here. So go ahead and start on the North Carolina State game. One of the things that stuck out to me in that game was how much better the offensive line played than they played against the Clemson defensive line. Which to some degree is a result of NC State not having as good a defensive line. I mean, they didn't have a Christian Wilkins out there or a true freshman freak of a player like Dexter Lawrence, but they've got a very, very good defensive line. And Florida State's offensive line basically held their own and protected, both protected in the passing game and opened up holes in the running game, though North Carolina State went 8-man and 9-man front so much that Florida State wasn't able to hit any bigger plays in the running game. But the offensive line was probably Florida State's best unit on either side of the ball on Saturday, which is a little bit of a departure from what we saw against Clemson, where they certainly were not that. So it's been a little bit interesting to see the ebbs and flows of that group to this point. I do think it's interesting that happens in a week in which Landon Dickerson, who of course is an outstanding true freshman that Florida State's leaned on up front, Landon Dickerson was not on the field for this one, having torn his ACL out for obviously the indefinite future. Not sure how soon he's going to be back and, you know, how much that's going to impact the 2017 season. But I wonder whether or not there's some coincidence, whether it's a coincidence or whether there's some causal connection, that is, on Wilson Bell being at that right guard position rather than the younger true freshman and having more success against a very good defensive front. And I wonder whether or not, I mean, Dickerson struggled some against Clemson, and I wonder whether or not having the more experienced Bell at that right guard position might have made a difference against Clemson. It's one of those things easy to second guess from this position, and obviously the coaches see these guys in practice every day. But the Florida State staff does have a tendency to favor younger players who are pretty close to even with the older players because, you know, they're going to be developing and they have more chance to ultimately be good down the line, a higher ceiling. And so if it's close now, they'll generally give the edge to the younger guy. But in this case, I wonder whether or not in that environment against Clemson, against that defensive front, whether or not it would have been better to have Wilson Bell in the game. It occurs to me that may have been something that would have worked a little better, given that Rubel had so much trouble, obviously, on the outside. That whole right side wound up in real trouble, and the combination of inexperience and just getting your tail kicked physically was a problem, particularly late in that game against Clemson. So just something to wonder about, something to toss out there at the beginning. But other things that stood out, DeAndre Francois still struggling with accuracy, particularly early in the game. And the thing is, he's capable of being accurate. I think that's pretty obvious because he goes through stretches where suddenly it looks like he starts feeling it and he gets in rhythm. When his footwork is good and he's getting rid of the football on time, he's pretty accurate. He's not Jameis Winston accurate. Not many guys are that. And he misses in the strike zone a lot, but he's at least not just airmailing guys or throwing it in the dirt or throwing it wide or whatever. And you know, Bud Elliott and I were talking not too long ago about this phenomenon of uncompetitive, non-competitive catches or whatnot. And I've proposed, I have a term to propose for such throws in the future, a throw that gives the wide receiver absolutely no chance to catch it. I propose that these throws be called treons, in honor of Treon Harris from the University of Florida the last couple of years, that we call these uncatchable throws treons for the foreseeable future. So anytime a quarterback makes a throw that just has no chance of being caught, no chance of doing anything good, that's a treon. And that's been a problem. Those treons have been a problem for DeAndre Francois early in games. And this goes all the way back to the first half of the Ole Miss game when there were a couple drives that got ended in that early in that first half against Ole Miss, where he just threw the ball in the dirt and didn't put it anywhere near the receiver, made some treons, and that ended some drives early in that game, and then came out much better in that second half. And I wonder to what degree that is a mental thing, because he does have the capacity to do it physically. We see that in second halves. I mean, the difference in completion percentage is almost 10 points between first and second half for Francois at this point. So, you know, it's one of those things you wonder how you can fix that if you're Jimbo Fisher. How can you get your young quarterback to come out better in that first frame, particularly in the first quarter? And you got to wonder whether or not there's some degree of injury stuff coming in with his shoulder being hurt since the Miami game a little bit. But like I said, it does go all the way back to the problem does go all the way back to Ole Miss, and really you could see some of it even this spring and back in high school as well. So, I mean, it's not a new thing. But you wonder if you're Jimbo Fisher, what can you do to get your guy really, really there? And I have a theory on this, and I may be wrong, but my theory on this is that if you look at when Francois has had the most success, it happens to be once things get, you know, it's sort of once the chips are really down, and once things start looking bad and he starts getting beat up or whatever, that's when it seems like he bristles. He gets angry and he plays different, plays loose, and just gets angry. And I wonder whether or not there's some degree of which when he comes out early, he's trying to aim the football, whether he's trying to just make the throws and be routine. And this is something that, you know, again, Fisher really emphasizes keeping control of your emotions and all this. And that's important. But I wonder to what degree a kid like Francois, I mean, first of all, he's coming out. It's clear he's coming out pretty amped up. So, I mean, that aspect of managing expectations and or managing emotions and all that is difficult for a freshman anyway. But he's coming out amped up, and I wonder whether there's an aspect of him trying to sort of play calm and just hit the routine throws. And that's the thing, is, I mean, you got to remember how Florida State scripts their opening series. One of the things that Jimbo Fisher does for that opening 10 to 15 plays every game is he sits down with his quarterback during the week and he says, okay, what do you feel most comfortable with? What have you seen? And those are the things that they rep the most in practice. I mean, the first series those first couple series are where you're supposed to be going through the stuff you've repped the most in practice, you're most comfortable with. It's the stuff the quarterback put down on the sheet of paper for Fisher saying, this is the stuff I'm really comfortable with. This is the stuff I want to run. That stuff goes in that early script, and that stuff is oddly the stuff that they've really been struggling to run. That's the hard part of explaining all this, is you would expect to be able to come out and run that stuff better than the other stuff, because that's the stuff you've repped the most, it's the stuff that your guys are most comfortable with and all that. But I wonder whether or not that comfort level, as he's going out there trying to manage his emotions and so on early in games, he goes out there and is just not quite as focused, because he's trying to aim it, trying to just sort of go through and rep it, as opposed to what happens once he gets hit a couple times, once he's in the fight. It's sort of like a light goes on and he starts to get ticked off, and you can see him kind of bristle up, and then he starts making different throws, confident throws. not throws where he's just making the throw, but throws where he's really putting it in there. And I wonder to what degree, this is something I've gone through a little bit with my quarterback this year in high school, is early in the season, we had a little bit of a disconnect with some receivers not running routes especially well and learning how to run with the precision necessary to be on the same page with the quarterback and all that. And also the quarterback coming out and needing to kind of get into the flow of the game. At one point we had to start running him and getting him hit a little bit early in the game. Just run him once and let him get hit early in the game, or alternatively, just give him a deep throw early in the game to really let him uncork that emotion that's in there and to kind of get in the fight. And I wonder to what degree that's the sort of thing that Fisher needs to do with DeAndre Francois to actually get him sort of wired in, plugged in, to be able to do what's necessary in those first drives to sort of have the switch go off that this is game time, and I've got to play with this level of intensity, this level of focus. I don't want to be out of control with my emotions, but I've got to play with this level of focus. And that's something that he's got to learn how to do. He's got to learn how to harness that and to focus that and play with that sort of underboiling rage that a lot of guys have to have. And Jameis Winston was similar to that. I mean, you go back to, I still say that back in the Florida game, his redshirt sophomore year in 2014, he did not play well in that game. And you remember that was around the time of the hearing, the Title IX hearing on campus. He did not play well in that Florida game up until one of the Florida players took a swing at him on the sideline and drew a personal foul. And then Winston just went off for a couple series and then sort of reverted back once halftime came and sort of things went back to normal. But when Winston was angry and charged up and got totally focused, he played different and he played better. And I wonder to what degree there's a little bit of that in DeAndre Francois, because I've been told that the kid, he doesn't necessarily take especially well to getting yelled at, but he also, I've been told he's got some spice to him, that he's a really competitive kid who will fight you, that kind of kid. And, you know, he's a fighter. And I wonder to what degree that aspect of harnessing his sort of fighting mentality is really what's necessary for Florida State to take the next step offensively, and getting him to be able to do that earlier in games. And I actually wonder whether or not getting him hit one or two times, paradoxically for a guy that's so banged up, I wonder whether getting him hit one or two times early in the game is actually the answer here for him, at least while he's young. And that's to me a curious thing. So I want to see whether or not that happens, whether or not they're willing to do that, and whether or not that makes any sort of difference. And it may not matter against Boston College this next week. Now, a couple other things that to take away from that NC State game, Auden Tate still playing that same role, but Francois starting to look for him just a little bit more. I mean, he's on the field about the same amount that he was early in the year, but again, it's a matter of where the quarterback decides to throw it. Big catch down the field against NC State, starting again to settle in a little bit more, although he does really need to learn how to time his jumps a little bit better. Noonie Murray, again, providing a real spark in replacing Bobo Wilson, really providing the same kind of production that Bobo produced earlier this year. Basically been no drop-off at that position, although Noonie did have two drops in this, one that was really key and ended a drive. And as much as Wilson has gotten a lot of abuse from fans for dropping balls this year, I think Wilson only dropped one or two balls all season in 2016. You know, you can talk about prior years or whatever all you want, but Wilson was Florida State's best wide receiver when he went down. A couple really, really key games. I mean, you look at Wilson's production up to now. Wilson, when he went down, he'd had that 9 reception for 125 yard game against Mississippi. He'd had 6 for 120 against North Carolina, 7 catches against Miami that were huge, including a couple really acrobatic catches that extended drives. He'd really been Florida State's best wide receiver so far this year, and there was some concern about how that was going to work in terms of replacing him, because he'd been the guy to make the tough, difficult catches and to get open in key situations this year. Well, Murray has been able to step in and largely do the same thing with no drop off. And Murray does bring to the table a little bit more in terms of physical physical ability. He's got a little bit more wiggle to him, and he accelerates better. He's a smoother athlete than Wilson. So you know, that's a good sign for Florida State's future. Also good that you know, he's getting some experience in terms of that for next year, and you hope that ultimately he's able to develop that rapport with Francois to basically gain some momentum for the 2017 season and to establish basically that connection that you want a top receiver to have. And he's got to stop dropping the football, but overall, he's a guy that you can expect to make some big plays in the future, and certainly has more big play potential replacing Wilson than Bobo did. Now, another thing, by the way, it's worth again mentioning one more time. Talked about this before. You hear people say, well, you know, if he's come in and he's been at least as good as Wilson so far, and you know, he was as good as Wilson in camp as well, or better. I mean, he may have been Florida State's best wide receiver in camp. Why didn't he play more earlier? There's a few answers to that question. A little bit is a more to the story question in terms of that's a behind closed doors deal with in terms of discipline and some of those things. But the other thing that you have to consider is the experienced quarterback, inexperienced receiver issue that you have sometimes. When you have a more experienced quarterback, you can do more in terms of your inexperienced receivers because you can afford to have those guys mess up a little bit because a quarterback can compensate for that. A little bit less true when you have young wide receivers and a young quarterback. That's a tough recipe, and that's one of those things that they've had to really work on trying to make sure that they give Francois the guys that he feels most comfortable with. And it's pretty clear, though, that after the Clemson game and now into the North Carolina State game, that he's really feeling comfortable with Murray and is starting to establish that rapport. So that's a real positive moving forward. A couple other things from that game. Again, a very poor ACC officiating. The pick play is what led to the touchdown for NC State. I mean, their tight end on the shallow route didn't even try to run a route. I mean, that's as obvious a pick play as you could have. I'm not sure how that was missed, but it was, and that led to that touchdown. Another touchdown was on a block in the back on Hoskins on that run play. And honestly, the last drive was extended because of a hog tie of DeMarcus Walker on the outside that led to the scramble where Burns was ejected. And had they properly called holding there, then yeah, Burns probably would have still been ejected, which is still, it's a little bit of a debatable call, but by rule, that's probably the right call. I just don't like the rule. By rule, that's probably the right call, but it should have been offsetting penalties and because of the egregious hold on the same play. And it was interesting to see that the way that worked this way. And there's no doubt that Fisher and Florida State at this point have to be feeling a little bit like the redheaded stepchild in terms of the ACC office and the way that they've handled officiating a Florida State game so far. Couple other things in terms of the Florida State defense, the performance of the Florida State secondary was, I think, very, very encouraging in this game, with a couple exceptions on third down where, particularly against a couple of those screens, the safeties just didn't play physical enough and they didn't take the proper angles, which allowed for a couple key conversions on long yardage. But by and large, they were excellent in coverage. This secondary continues to grow up, and there's been some real development of some quality young talent in that secondary, because North Carolina State with Jalen Samuels did have some capacity to really test them on the interior, on the inside of that defense, and they really weren't able to create the big plays that you might have expected against that secondary, which is a very good sign moving forward, especially since two out of the next three games that Florida State's going to play are against essentially toothless offenses. So you know, that's something that, again, that is a positive, where it's unlikely that the defense is going to end up being a real problem any further for this season. And they continue to show what I think, like I said, is real growth, real development. Although I still think the linebacker position right now is not growing in the way that I would kind of expect it to be. I don't think that that the linebackers are developing at the rate that I would hope for. And you know, I'll just leave that on its own there in terms of what that may suggest. I do think, by the way, that it's pretty clear to me that Matthew Thomas is essentially Christian Jones 2.0, a freaky athletic linebacker who's capable of running with guys in coverage, capable of doing a lot of things, but just isn't natural in that role going backwards. He's much better moving forwards. He can do it. He can cover. He can do all that, but he's much more valuable as a pass rusher, as an edge rusher in a buck role, and he can do some coverage stuff, drop off in coverage there. But I actually think that they would benefit doing with him what they did with Christian Jones and having him man that basically Jacob Pugh-type role. I think he's actually better in the Jacob Pugh role than Jacob Pugh has been. But put both of those guys on the field to rush the passer. Put one of them on the field with Brian Burns. Use those guys more off the edge to produce some havoc. And I think Florida State's a better defense. And again, remember, it took a while for them to figure that out defensively in 2013 with Christian Jones, that putting Christian Jones on the edge to create some of that havoc was actually basically the answer for providing some pressure in that year. I think actually it would have been the same way this year with Matthew Thomas, and they really need to consider that for next season. Maybe going more base three-man line with Matthew Thomas and Jacob Pugh doing a lot of rotation on the outside there as a havoc producer, Brian Burns as well as a havoc producer in those roles. I think they can get a lot out of that. And again, because Thomas is such a good athlete, you can then drop him into coverage. You can do things in addition to rushing him that allow him to create havoc. But I just think he's a lot better when he's moving forward and is just told to create havoc than when he's having to read plays and do a lot of other things. At least the way that this group has been coached at that linebacker position, that seems to be the case. So, I think that basically sums up my thoughts of the NC State game. Basic takeaways there. Aside from, again, winning any win in Carter-Finley in Raleigh is a good win. A lot of Florida State fans, I don't think, quite appreciate it. It's partly because Florida State was so dominant in the ACC for so long. A lot of Florida State fans don't appreciate how difficult it is to win on the road in conference, because these are teams that are familiar with you, they're used to playing you, and it's just a different thing. You see this in every conference, but Florida State fans have been so spoiled by Florida State's road success in the ACC for so long that it's basically dismissed. But you think about it, the last time Florida State won 2 years in a row in Carter-Finley, or two trips in a row to Carter-Finley, were 94 and 96 in the middle of the dynasty. Then they lost in 1998, and that started this run of really struggling in Carter-Finley. This is the second time in a row that Florida State's now won at Carter-Finley under Fisher, which, like I said, is the first time since 1996 that's happened. So that actually is a real positive, is a good indicator for a young team that's banged up and continuing to develop to be able to make it out of there with still a chance to wind up with double-digit wins in this season once you add in the bowl game. So, that's a plus. One other thing also that is worth mentioning, that's not directly about the NC State game, but there's some question as to what Jimbo Fisher's plan with DeAndre Francois is moving forward. Is he going to ever run him all that much? I mean, I don't think he's a Jalen Hurts type kid that you run like that. But how much variety is he going to use with Francois? Is he going to try to convert him into being a true pocket passer, a Jameis Winston? I don't think that's the case. I mean, I've talked to Jimbo before about the quarterback run game and so on, and he's all for using it, but he wants to use it selectively. He wants to use it in situations where it really matters. He likes to reserve it in particular for big games. But the thing that I think is important to remember as we look forward, as we move forward in this year, and as we go back all the way to the UNC game, once Florida State lost to UNC and this was no longer a playoff year, It became clear for Fisher and the rest that the best thing that they could do to ultimately make DeAndre Francois a more complete player and a better player for next year is to develop him more as a pocket passer, where he still is more undeveloped. To focus more on that for the rest of this year makes a lot of sense. And it also continues to develop him for the NFL, which Fisher does think is an important thing. It's also an important aspect of Fisher's recruiting pitch for quarterbacks, that he's going to spend time not just running a college offense with these guys, but developing them for the NFL. That's something that he pitches to these guys, and he still values as a quarterback coach in trying to honor his word and also working with, you know, trying to attract the next guy that could be an NFL talent at quarterback. Fisher understands that the thing that matters most in college football is quarterback play. And he's trying to make sure that that Florida State stays stocked there at that position, which, by the way, may not be done in terms of recruiting for Florida State this year. There's still some there's still been some feelers out, and there's still been some contact there that Florida State, you know, is potentially not entirely done. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. I think they'll probably only sign the two that they've got, but they're not entirely done in terms of recruiting the position. And again, they're wanting to bring in as much talent as they can, particularly given the, I suppose, liminal state, you could say, of Malik Henry in the program at this point. I think that's an important thing to do. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens with Francois moving forward, but I do expect them to continue to focus on his development as a pocket passer for the rest of 2016 and through spring practice, largely because they know that they can do some run stuff with him in the future, although, you know, I don't think they teach the zone read especially well. They know that they can do that stuff in the future, but it's not a guarantee that they can actually get him to the point where he's able to be the pocket passer without giving those additional reps and making those calls at this point in the year in games that they should win. So, and also given that he's being backed up right now by a guy that frankly, you know, he's a senior and you're not going to get much benefit out of, and there is a drop off there. It's not the same as if they're running him where they've got a guy that they think can come in and basically replicate that kind of success in the offense. So that's another aspect. They certainly don't want to get him hurt as banged up as he is, which, again, the question is, how can you maybe get him hit a couple times early in games without risking getting him hurt? And that's one of the things to balance for this coaching staff. All right, we're going to go ahead and move to the last segment here, talking a little bit about the Boston College game. Ultimately, I think this is a game that Florida State should win comfortably. Boston College is, quite frankly, not a very good football team. They're well coached, as always, with the Steve Adazio team. But at the end of the day, this is a team that averages 4.64 yards per play on offense and gives up 5.29 yards per play on defense. Well, that's not good. That's not what you go for as a coach. And you know, it's not a team that is one that you expect Florida State to have as much trouble with as they did in the last few years, particularly because Don Brown, their, you know, outstanding defensive coordinator, has moved on to Michigan. And also some of the key defensive talent that they had on a couple of those teams has also moved on to the NFL or graduation. So that's another aspect altogether. But I do think this is going to be a physical game. Florida State's going to be challenged up front on both sides of the ball yet again. But I think Florida State wins those matchups. I just don't think Boston College can score enough to threaten Florida State in this game. I'm not sure how well Florida State's offense is going to play in the early going yet again, because, I mean, they are decent on defense. 5.29 yards per play on defense is good. It's respectable. But I just don't think they're going to be able to score enough points to threaten Florida State in this game. I mean, you look at it, Virginia Tech, they got shut out. Against Clemson, they scored 10. Against Syracuse, they scored 20. Against NC State, they scored 21 in a win. Against Louisville, they scored 7. This is not a team that can score a lot of points. If Florida State scores over 21 points in this game, they're going to win the game. And I don't think that Boston College is going to be able to hold Florida State to under 21 points, particularly given some of the playmakers that Florida State's got on the outside. I don't see it happening. I think Florida State probably wins this game by 21, in that range, somewhere in the line of, say, 34-13 kind of game. And I think that's about right. I'm not even sure that Boston College ends up scoring that many points. Am I certain that Florida State scores 34, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a wider margin. I think this should be a comfortable win, but it is Boston College on a Friday night. So as always, we'll be watching. The off chance that something happens, is always why college football is one big reason why college football is so popular and why it's so compelling. But in any case, that's going to do it for us here on the Unconquered podcast. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow us, subscribe to us via your podcast manager of choice. Please leave effusive 5-star ratings. on iTunes. That definitely helps us move up the rankings in terms of podcasts and be able to attract some ad dollars and such, and be able to put this out a little bit more frequently. You can also follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can listen to this podcast also on Seminole Sports Radio at vSporto, both online and via the Seminole Sports Radio app. Make sure to catch the next podcast, which will cover the outcome of the Boston College game. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of vSporto Channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.